Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast with me, Gareth A. Davis. And joining me this week is Spencer Oliver. I'm in Las Vegas and Spencer is in London at TalkSport Towers. We picked over the bones of the postponement of the Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder 3 fight in Las Vegas, scheduled for July the 24th, which has now been moved to October the 9th. Spencer and I went all over that. We were joined, first of all, by Frank Warren, who spoke to us about his fighters, but also that situation with Fury and Wilder.
A quick thing, Frank, first of all, on Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, delayed, postponed till October the 9th. What's the feeling inside the camp about this?
Well, obviously everybody's disappointed. You know, Tyson's been in training for what now? By the time this fight comes around, he'll be in 20 months out of the ring. So he's obviously very disappointed, that's the age we live in at the moment. These things happen, so what can you do?
Yeah, he's faced quite a backlash from fans over it. The fact that that fight's delayed, that the Fury Joshua fight didn't happen, and having my contact with him myself, and I'm sure your contact with him is that he's frustrated and desperate to get out there and fight.
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, what backlash can you have over it? I mean, a judge ordered the fight, and and he's got COVID. I mean, so what's he supposed to do? He would be allowed to fight if he wanted, and he does want to. No one's going to allow him to box at the moment. He's not allowed to. You know, that's how it is. Everyone's frustrated, of course, they are, but the fighters are more frustrated than anyone else in all this. You know, this backlash you sell, this, you know, for want of a better, was it trolling, whatever it is, it's ridiculous, it's stupid.
I was going to say, Frank, have you had a chance to speak to Tyson Fury and, you know, sort of how is he now the fight has been delayed again? Because it has been such a frustrating 20 months for him or so, you know, how's he taking it all, like now going down with COVID? Like, what's his mood like?
Well, he's obviously very, very frustrated. It's not like I was speaking to Bob Arum yesterday. Bob, like everyone's also paid off it. I mean, I see that Eddie Hearn had made some comments about it, that tickets hadn't sold. They've done £14 million worth of tickets up until the postponement. So it's just rubbish. He's disappointed, but, you know, you have to get on with it. Nothing you can do about it. It's life.
Well, we go to the T-Mobile Arena on October the 9th, of course, and hopefully that will allow more fans to travel. There's more of a head of steam. We'll catch up with Bob Arum later. I spoke to him earlier, and we'll hear from him about the American side of it all. Frank, obviously, big one coming up, Joe Joyce against Carlos Takam. A great measuring yardstick, this one, for Joe Joyce?
Well, it's a tough fight for him. You know, everybody knows who Takam is, and the fight's been quite well received by everybody, and that tells you because they know it's going to be a tough fight for Joe. I mean, as much as Joe was a silver medalist in the games. He's only had 12 pro fights, so he's still pretty much of a novice. And you know, this guy that does come to fight, he's tough, and I think he's going to give Joe. He's definitely going to give Joe a tough fight. He's coming to fight, and they believe they can win. And what's at stake is Joe's number one spot with the WBO, which is mandatory to the winner of AJ and Usyk.
Takam might have been knocked out badly by Derek Chisora with those hooks on that night where he was perhaps being beaten up to that point. But Takam certainly gave Anthony Joshua a run for his money in that fight in Cardiff. And I just wonder whether you, apart from the rankings itself, whether this kind of marks a position that Joe, do you believe Joe is ready to challenge for world titles whenever a spot becomes available?
Well, look, you know, he's done everything that's been asked him up to as yet. This is going to be another tough fight, you know, another tough opponent for him. I mean, he fought Daniel Dubois last time out. We all know how that ended, but you know that was over, it was a tough fight still for the both of them. You're right; it's a yardstick for him. But if you're number one position, and a governing body puts you there, you're there for a reason. It's because they believe that you are ready to fight for a world title. So he's got to go out there and do the business, and not just win. It's win well, you know, so that everybody, you know, sits up and takes more noses at Joe.
Frank, you've done a great job with Joe so far, and you're moving along quite nicely. And you know, Dubois, a lot of people thought was a big gamble for him, a fight that I think Dubois was actually favourite going into that contest. Joe come through with flying colours. Takam, again, as Gareth said, is a very tough guy, and you know, he's mixed it with the best, and he's held his own with the best. If he comes through this one, what would your ideal 12-month plan be for Joe Joyce? Would you like to see him up there in the mix, or would you like to keep continuing, you know, putting him in with those fringe contenders and letting him grow and learn on the job?
Well, I think, you know, hopefully he comes through the fight. And he just needs to keep busy. You know, as a pro, he needs to get more and more experience. So I hope it's not going to... I'm not going to bock him, but this is his 13th fight coming up, so let's hope that that's not going to be... It's not ominous as far as everything's concerned, but if he comes for it, I just want to keep him busy whilst he gets into a position where, you know, where he can challenge for a world title.
Frank, I happened to be there obviously last weekend. A great night at the Albert Hall. Great to be back there. Some of your young stars in action: Archie Sharp, Dennis McCann. I mean, even his kids were shouting, "Come on, Dad!" I could hear them all. Lyndon Arthur looked good. In an interesting fight, kept his unbeaten record. Zach Parker kept his unbeaten record at super middle. Lyndon at light heavy, of course. But we saw a young light heavyweight in Carol Itauma, who looks very promising. And only 2-0 he is, but he's got great physique, and there's a lot of good things being said about him.
Well, that's his third fight, and he did do well. He's he is a junior world gold. A junior Olympic gold medalist. So, you know, he's at that level, he's done brilliant. Don't do no better than that, winning a gold medal. That was his third fight. And the fella was strong, and he caught him with a good shot. And what impressed me, he caught Carroll with a good shot. And what impressed me is how he sort of cleared his head. He looked like he got a bit buzzed to me, and he just cleared his head, and he just... turned on the gas and done what he had to do and stopped his man. But, you know, he's still a baby. He's only 20 years of age, so there's no rush with him. And the game with him, he just needs to get more and more experience and just keep him busy. I don't want to burn him out because, Camontas has said that, you know, they wanted to get him out, like, as soon as possible, like in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But I don't want that. I think we really need for him to become a man and get a bit more strength before we start pressing on them. He just needs experience and fighting the right type of opponents at this stage of his career.
Yeah, Frank, you have got some brilliant young talent coming through, and you've got some great young talent on that show next week, Joe Joyce versus Carlos Takam. What I wanted to ask you, Frank, is what sort of capacity will we have in the SS Arena in Wembley?
Well, we set it up for 3,500. That's what we were allowed. So that's what it's set up for, which is a bit of a disappointment, but it is what it is. And then I think back come August, then we'll be back to full capacity.
Frank, finally, there's a lot of despair around the boxing world at the moment because the heavyweight fights haven't been happening and they've been put back. And give us a message for the fans that, you know, maybe all is not lost, that we will get back to this kind of narrative of trying to get an undisputed title in the heavyweight division.
Well, we all want that. We all work towards it. But, you know, a few people got carried away announcing things before they were due to happen. There always was an arbitration as far as Tyson is concerned. And everybody seemed to be overlooking it. And I've never understood why. But anyway, you know, as far as the fans are concerned, we're in strange and unprecedented times. You know, if it hadn't been for the COVID, I think both him and Anthony Joshua would have had their respective contractual commitments. Because remember, Joshua also had a problem with Usyk, who was about to take out legal proceedings to enforce his position as his challenger. So, you know, they would have got them out of the way had there not been the COVID situation, and then hopefully they'd have both have got it on. We've just got to be a bit patient. Unfortunately, as we all know, as we've just discussed, Tyson wound up catching COVID. But let them get their fight on, their respective fights on, and then they can get it on early next year, and we can see them in action. You know, the heavyweight division is really, really strong as far as the UK is concerned. I mean, we're the sort of blue ribbon division as far as the heavyweights are. And what people should bear in mind with Tyson, this is the guy that's gone on the road, you know, three times, fought for the world title three times on the road. He went to Germany, beat Klitschko, had no fear going to Germany, twice went to the States to fight Wilder, got robbed the first time, and then done a job on him in a second time. So no one can dispute what Tyson's made of. You know, he had no home advantage each time he's gone abroad into the other guy's backyard. So give him some credit for that, surely.
Well, our thanks to Frank there for joining us. Next up, his light heavyweight, Lyndon Arthur, joined us fresh off his victory last weekend at the Royal Albert Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the current Commonwealth champion, and tonight, the reigning and defending WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight Champion, Lyndon King Arthur!
13 seconds remaining, one more punch might do it and it's all over. And Lyndon Arthur in the ninth round finds the stoppage.
Your winner, and still WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight Champion, Lyndon King Arthur!
How do you feel after victory over David Ferracci last weekend at that brilliant venue, the Royal Albert Hall?
Yeah, it was a pleasure to box there, because I found out recently that Muhammad Ali and a few other great fighters have boxed there, so to put my name on that list was great, and also to get a good win there was also pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the venue stayed dormant from boxing for about 9 years, I think, at one point, and Frank Warren brought it back there. But like you say, back in the day, it was a staple of boxing, along with the Empire Pools and all the places around London. It's an amazing venue. I mean, I know we only had about 1,000 people in there, Lyndon, but you know, when it's so circular and so focused into the centre, I'm glad you got something out of it. It was a different performance from you against Ferracci. I thought that you almost, I don't mean this in a rude way, but you seemed sluggish early on, like there wasn't a snap about you. Am I wrong?
You know what, I probably are a little bit right in that. I don't know, I'm probably not underestimating him, but I kind of, like I half didn't fear him at all, so I don't know, maybe I just thought it was going to be an easy night's work kind of thing, and as a boxer, you shouldn't really think like that, but it's kind of hard when you feel you're better somebody, you're in there, but again, no disrespect to Ferracci. He came and he gave a good account of himself, and he was in there to win. I felt like he was in there. I was hitting him, and he was coming back. He wasn't shy. He was. I felt like he thought he could win, even though I felt levels above him in there. But you know, it is what it is. We got the victory, and we move on.
Absolutely. No, you did. And you warmed. I didn't mean it disrespectfully. You warmed into the fight and you were hitting him. I thought it was a different kind of performance because you were going after him with power in the end. And you got the stoppage, ninth round, wasn't it? The thing is now, you're ranked number one with the WBO. I know that they're looking to rematch you with Anthony Yard in October. Is that right? Rather than pushing for a world title right now?
I'm not sure if it's October. I have not finalised any date yet, but if that's the next fight, then that's the next fight. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, Lyndon, I actually thought it was a great performance on Saturday night. You know, Ferracci was one of those guys. It was quite unorthodox. He come forward and he threw lots of punches. And he was a lot shorter than you, and he did come to win. He come with an unbeaten record, and all fighters with unbeaten records come to win. He come to take your number one spot and put his name up there. I thought actually you boxed really well. I thought you sort of like you always looked like you was in control, even the rounds that maybe you were losing. You always looked like you was going to get victory. And what you do, Lyndon, and what impresses me so much, you've done it against Anthony Yard as well. Is you do enough to win. You're one of those guys that always raises his game to the level of opponent, and I think that's what it was there. And I was a little bit like that when I boxed as well. Sometimes when you box someone that's maybe a little bit lesser, you sort of drop down to their standard, but you still do enough to win, even though fights can be competitive. And I think the Anthony Yard fight proved there, because I think going into that fight, when you boxed Yard, you was going into that fight really as the underdog. Yard was the one that people thought was going to come through. He put in a good performance against Kovalev, and they felt that he was going to win that fight. And I think you sort of like you won that fight really behind your jab. That's your key weapon, isn't it? You dominate with a jab. You whip in those right hands, and you get the job done. I think, mate, honestly, with the right progression and, you know, taking the right steps and taking the right opportunities at the right time, I think you're going to go on and win a world title. Actually, I'm going to actually go out there and say this. I think you could be one of the most underrated fighters in the country. I think that you're one of those guys that is much, much better than what people recognise right now. But I think they will in time.
Yeah, I appreciate them words. And I also do believe that myself. And, you know, like you say, the raising the levels and fighting at the level that you're in there with the opponent with when you feel under no threat and no pressure that you feel like you're going to win anyway, your level just kind of drop by accident.
Sure.
You don't mean it to. It just does, because you're just so confident in the fact that there's nothing that this person in front of you can do to beat you. And I guess I'm not making no excuses. That might have been what happened. Maybe it'll start off night. I don't know, but the main thing is I got the job done. I got a great knockout victory.
Sure.
That's what matters to me. And going forward, if I have to up my level, I can do that. I believe even anybody watching me knows that was nowhere near my best performance.
Sure.
By any means necessary. So, you know, I'm not too fussed.
No, sure, listen.
I feel, Spence, I feel a bit better now. I feel a bit better after sounding very critical of you, Lyndon, that you actually weren't that happy with your performance until you got him out of there, weirdly.
Even especially in the sixth, maybe, I think when I watched it back, I think fifth and sixth, seventh. Then middle rounds, I kind of dipped a little bit, and I was just defending. To be fair, if I'm honest with you, I was having fun in there.
Sure.
I was just working on my defense, working on things. Probably should have done a little bit more throwing off my defending, but that's just in my arsenal. I can do that when needed, and will do that going forward. So, you know, I'm as much as I can be critical, there's good things I can take from it as well.
Sure. Listen, Lyndon, I'm speaking like as an ex-fighter and me putting myself in that position, and it took me back to times when I fought guys that are maybe lesser and everything else. I don't think you underperformed or was sluggish. You do seem to dip to the opponent's level. That's what you do, but you do enough to win. And actually, if you look at the pluses from that performance, I thought that, you know, there was a lot of pluses from that performance. You was boxing a guy that was like sort of a little awkward because he was short and he was coming to win and he was throwing shots from all over the place. He was trying to push the pace, but you controlled it. And I think that's the most important thing. And I thought, I took a lot of positives from your fight, if I'm totally honest, because I read a lot of articles saying that actually it was a lackluster performance, but you got the job done in the end. Well, I didn't see it that way, mate. I thought that, you know, you'd done what you had to do. You got the job done. You worked him out and you took him out, and it was a clinical finish. So I can only take pluses from that performance.
Can I also say he also threw some of the weirdest punches I've ever seen, Lyndon?
Yeah. So I mean, it was a kind of an awkward fight with him being awkward and also undefeated, and also, you know, he was an ex-champion in his country. He's ranked number one in Italy. So let's not take that away from him. Sure. In his country, he was the best light heavyweight. So, you know, I'm Box Rec rankings anyhow. So, you know, I'd be a credible-ish guy there. So, you know, it is what it is. Whether the performance was or wasn't good enough for everybody's eyes, it was good enough to get a knockout victory, and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, you listen, you're sneaking up in the shadows without being noticed, and that's sometimes that stealth way is a brilliant thing to do. 19-0, 13 knockouts. I think you're now number eight with the WBC. I think you're four with the IBF and number one challenger with the WBO. I didn't see you in the WBA list, but that's not a bad position to be in, Lyndon, is it?
Of course, being ranked, you know, across the board of the organisations of the world in the sport that I'm in, that can't be a bad thing, though. So, you know, I must be doing something right. And going forward, I obviously want a world title, so I will keep pushing towards that.
We were back on the Fury Wilder theme then, speaking to top-ranked promoter Bob Arum and top-ranked president Todd DeBoeuf. Here's what they had to tell Spencer and I, and we discussed it afterwards.
We were informed by the commission doctor that not only Tyson Fury, but that nine other people in his camp who had been using the gym with him had come down with COVID. Our first concern was their health. We got them the best medical attention and so forth. And Tyson was experiencing difficulty breathing. His lungs seemed like they were clogged, according to him. And one of the sparring partner, Effie, from Africa, got so sick that we had to get him to the hospital. But he was discharged in a few hours. Fortunately, none of the cases appeared that serious, so that there would be any long-term effect. When I checked in with Tyson on a daily basis, and he showed steady improvement, but he was still required to stay in quarantine for a period of days until he was COVID-free. There could be no sparring. Everything had to be suspended, and that necessitated us postponing the July 24th fight.
It's fascinating stuff, isn't it, Spencer, that Tyson Fury was, they first discovered it, that he had COVID, that he was having problems breathing, he couldn't go 12 rounds in sparring properly. Efe Ajagba had it as well and was taken to hospital. That was the Efe he was referred to, the young heavyweight who looks like a real rising star in the sport. So, you know, the fact that there are conspiracy theorists out there that this wasn't an outbreak, and I say I've spoken to people in person who said they really weren't well out here, members of his team, shows that, it hasn't been for show. It's not because they want to put the fight off. This was a genuine COVID outbreak.
Absolutely. You know, it's frustrating, if I'm honest, Gareth. You know, people know what's going on in the world today. People know how serious this virus is. You know, this, you know, COVID respects nobody, you know. And it's
very
quite...
well put.
Yeah. And it's just frustrating, mate, if I'm totally honest, that rumours have been made up and rumours are circulating that, you know, that their ticket sales were no good and so they've had to move the fight back. Well... if we go through the layers of this and break it down, if ticket sales were no good and they had to push the fight back to October, what would improve ticket sales by October? Nothing. Yeah. You know, the ticket sales, I don't think, were as bad as what the rumours were circulating. You know, I think that, as Bob Arum was saying, you know, they were doing very well and sort of... the money was there. It's just that it's down to the virus, COVID. And unfortunately, you know, these things happen. They've put it off and it's been rescheduled. It's a fight that I want to see. Of course it is. You know, Deontay Wilder has been training like a lunatic. You know, he wants his revenge. I think he's going to come with a different game plan. So, yeah, I just think it's very unfortunate that this fight has been delayed through COVID. But I also think it's very unfortunate that Tyson Fury is taking the backlash that he's taking because he's got sick.
Well, it's obviously, it had become a bigger fight for July the 24th. By the time it comes around again, people will be excited to see it, I'm sure. But what I also did, I spoke to Top Rank president Todd DeBoeuf a little earlier today, and here's what he had to say about the situation as well.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. They pulled out deliberately, this, that and the other. A lot of, not allegations, but a lot of people having conspiracy theories. Can you just verify that? Because I'm hearing that there were team members of the camp had it from last Monday, what was effectively 12, or detected it when they weren't feeling well 12 days ago. And that there were up to 5 members of Tyson Fury's team, and then other people in the gym that you guys use, the Top Rank gym, and then the other gym that you've been using, that there were multiple people testing positive with COVID.
Yes, I mean, listen, we got wind of it. Neither Bob nor I got wind of it, but our chief operating officer, who deals directly with Brad Jacobs, got wind of this immediately. As soon as we found out that somebody wasn't feeling well, we put them into a very aggressive protocol system. Isolation, we did the quick tests right away, the Q quick tests, to get flash tests. Once those came back within 15, 20 minutes, we were getting a good indication to follow up with PCRs, and then we just went widespread into it. Obviously, who had it and didn't have it is confidential information, right? But they had an outbreak within the camp. But we put in a protocol system, we notified the commission, and obviously then notified the Wilder camp as we saw this heading towards a potential postponement.
The other thing that was put out there as well was that, it was done deliberately because ticket sales weren't going well. I mean, when I spoke to Bob yesterday very briefly, he was saying that absolutely not. There were no issues, that there was a big gate coming in for this fight on July the 24th.
Well, I mean, emphatically, and I don't, that's just kind of like, and I'm not going to indict people that want to start spinning crap around, but, you know.
Well, he was having a pop at Eddie Hearn as well at the time, to me.
Well, then. I mean, listen, you can indict Eddie for that, but I mean, I can tell you this, we were on track to break our record, which was the first fight, which was in February 20th. We had more advanced sales for this one than we did for that one that broke the heavyweight record in the U.S., which was, I think, 17 million. We were in a great position. I was disappointed because now you see what you had was a nice coffer, which was well above the expectation we had, largely because we weren't sure, right? We weren't sure what the market was going to be like, demand was going to be like. We had saw that McGregor and Poirier had done really well at the gate. They ended up at 15. We just didn't know. We didn't know what the UK fans were going to do. Were they going to sit on the sidelines, or they were going to activate and try to get to the US and risk what the quarantines and protocols would be? But we were pleasantly surprised by the pace and specifically the support around the ticket sales.
Do you feel that it works almost better now, even though it's not what the fans wanted? No doubt it's not what the fighters wanted. I know that Tyson Fury was very frustrated, he couldn't go forward. You know, he's desperate to get back into the ring. But overall, is it a better picture on October the 9th in terms of traveling fans and still the gates and all of those kind of things?
You know, I think it's too early to tell, right? I think it's, I mean, one is they're both speculation, right? We could have made it work in July, which we thought was doing great. I think we've gotten all our assets done. We've done everything. I think you possibly could see one of two things happening, right? You could see an ease on international travel, which could help activate some of the UK people to come into the States, which could be very beneficial. We do know that supporting programming in the fall with the NFL and college football and obviously Major League Baseball in the playoffs is going to give us some real good promotional opportunities to drive awareness, where this summer you're just at the beginning of the Olympics, the first day of the Olympics. So you don't have like those big tent pole massive audiences, but you're able to carve your own niche for that night. So you don't have headwind. Where in the fall, we may have headwind with a big college football game up against us here in the States. So I don't know that one's better than the other. I think as it plays out, we'll start to see how it plays. But I think they both work because it's a compelling fight and it's the heavyweight championship with two charismatic guys.
It's hard to disagree with him, Spencer. Heavyweight championship, that there is a narrative for two charismatic guys, and that there are some disadvantages and advantages of it moving to October the 9th. But there you go, through Bob Arum telling us the foundations of what happened 12 days ago with the COVID outbreak, to Todd DeBoeuf dispelling the myths around ticket sales, that there's already 14 to 15 million had come in from the casinos and so on, buying the tickets, get almost up to that 17 million record that they had for the second fight last February, that, you know, it's just the situation it is. It's disappointing. We're all deflated, but we've got to crack on with it and come back on October the 9th.
Absolutely, Gareth. You know, look, listen, they're two very charismatic heavyweights. We know Deontay Wilder carries that whack that he could win a contest at any given time.
Absolutely.
Tyson Fury's, you know, goes down as the greatest heavyweight out there at the moment, pound for pound, probably number one. So, of course, there's an appetite for the fight. Of course, people wanted to see it again. I want to see it again. So, you know, roll on October the 9th. That's all I can say.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Next, we were joined by Lee Wood, who fights for a world featherweight title against Shu Ken on the first weekend of Fight Camp, July 31st. We wish him all the best. He was great fun. Here's what he had to say.
We're reminiscing about Prince Nassim Allen. He would have been proud of a shot like that from Lee Wood. Down in the fourth, down in the ninth. This is Wood's chance. All over. British champion Lee Wood. And he was lethal. Right at the end, a fantastic victory for the Nottingham man.
Your winner by technical count out, and the new British featherweight champion from Gatling, Nottingham, Lethal Lee Wood.
First of all, I've got to ask you this. There's another famous boxer from Gedling by the name of Karl Frotch. Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you eventually going to be Gedling's most famous boxer?
It takes some beating, won't it? You know, there's no secrets how many people box in front of.
Well, listen, if you can get 81,000 at Wembley, you might have one over on him.
No, on a serious note, you know, one thing Carl ever did, which I want to do, is be the first person to headline at the Forest Ground, the City Ground, and, you know, it's going to give me my own identity to do that, and he never did that. So that's one thing that might upset him a little bit.
So would victory over Shukan, obviously, I should introduce this, you have a world title, you're the British featherweight champion, but you have an opportunity. You're 24 wins, 2 losses, 14 wins by knockout. Does this opportunity against Shukan, who we heard from Josh Warrington in the last section, Lee, he was heading towards him until he was beaten by Mauricio Lara in February. Shukan defends his WBA featherweight title against you on Matchroom Fight Camp, the first weekend of in 2 weeks' time, basically.
Yep.
How big an opportunity is this for you to force that fight in Nottingham at the Forest Ground?
It's massive, mate. It is massive. 2 weeks tonight. You know, winning this fight is going to open up a lot of doors, and it takes me a step closer to my dream of headlining, being the first person to headline at the City Ground, and I can't overlook him. It's an hard fight. You know, it's at that level. It's a level I've never been at, but it's a level I'm confident I deserve to be at. And I've proven time and time again at domestic level, you know, I've won pretty much all my fights at domestic level by knockout. Obviously, I lost on a split decision to Jazza, but he's quite show-like, and I can't really tag him clean, you know. But I think this is going to be a totally different story 2 weeks tonight. You know, he's here to be hit, and I'm coming to take the win. I'm coming to take a massive victory and take a step closer to that massive fight at the City Ground.
Lee, did you ever expect? Like this would have, did you ever imagine that this would happen? You know, going back to 2014, 2015, losing to Gavin McDonald, stopped in six. You've really, from then, we look at your career and look at your development and seen how you've come on, seen how you've improved. You've gone in a couple of times as the underdog, turned it around, pulled off brilliant victories. Very close fight against Jazza Dickens, who also fights for a world title in fight camp as well against Kid Galahad. But that was a majority decision. Could have gone either way, actually, that fight. But did you ever imagine that you'd find yourself in this position now? You know, you're within touching range of winning that world title. You win that, mate, and your whole life will turn around.
That's it, mate. You know, I've always had probably one of my best attributes is just determination to get to where I want to get to, no matter what I go through, ups and downs. You know, the British title fight was probably a bit too early back in 2014, at the wrong weight. I was dead at the weight. You know, if you watch the fight, ability wise, it was walking the park for me. I felt like I could hit him when I want, and I just didn't have it in the tank. Even after a few rounds, I just knew I'd not done the weight right. But that was a bitter pill to swallow at the time, you know, because you just want to. When you feel like you're better than a certain level and you didn't win because of boxing skill, it was so hard at the time, and I went through so much, and I just knew in my head, right, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make sure I don't get it wrong. And I had a lot of management issues as well. I had a few injuries along the way, but you know, I kept going. I was just hell bent. I'm going to get there no matter what it takes, no matter what I've got to go through, I'm going to get there. And that mindset has got me here today. You know, there's so many opportunities I've had to hang them up and just walk away from the sport. Management issues, like I said, 2 major operations, another defeat after in the Golden Contract. Like, it was a majority decision, but you know, it's still a defeat. But all these things I've overcome, and I've learnt more from losses, and I've come back stronger. And it's why I deserve to be here. And I'm going to show in 2 weeks' time, you know, that metal, that same desire to win on fight night.
Sure.
I think what's fascinating is you look at Shu Ken's record, and he's clearly, well, we know what he, well, we've watched him several times. He's, you know, he's a clever technical volume puncher, not a massive knockout artist. And so we know that you carry equalizing power. So as long as you can, and as you say, he's not difficult to hit. He's very durable as well. But if you can storm him, if you can have dominant moments in the fight and unsettle him, that this, I don't want to call it an upset to you, because in your mind it's not going to be an upset, but you know, this is an opportunity that could genuinely project you onto a completely different level.
Yep, absolutely. You know, it's a massive platform. A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are surprised it's come out of nowhere. For some people, it's been kept under wraps. But yeah, like you said, it's a volume puncher. You know, I've got a lot of power. My coach, Ben Davison, says I'm pound for pound the biggest puncher ever took on the pads. And it's no surprise, time and time again, like I said earlier, I've had 6 title fights in my professional career, all by knockout. I carry a lot of power, but what's underrated for me is probably my adaptability. You know, if you watch many of my fights, if you go back from 2015, Joshua, Lee Glover, if you go back from all, you know, I don't box exactly the same every time, and I can adapt quite well. You know, Ben gives me instructions in camp to do something, I can practice it and I can change. I trust Ben 100% with the game plan, like I did in my last fight. Going into this fight, we've got a great game plan. I know what I've got to do. I'm going to go out and do it.
Yeah, Lee. Do you know what? There's been so many moving parts in this featherweight division, isn't there? Like, Toucan was meant to box Josh Warrington in a unification bout. That fight fell through. Warrington gave up his IBF featherweight title. That's now being contested by Jazza Dickens and Kid Galahad. You get the opportunity against Toucan now. Is this something that's just sort of come out of nowhere? Did you see this coming? Did you see yourself, look, you was boxing in British title fights in your last fight. Great performance, by the way, against Rhys Mould, winning that in 9 rounds, and it was a brilliant performance. You know, you demonstrated that you've got a lot of power. Your power, actually, is very, very underestimated. You throw long, straight shots and you get the job done. But did you ever think, after winning against Rhys Mould for the British title, you'd find yourself in this position with the opportunity to box for a world title?
I thought within 18 months I was going to get a crack at a world title. I didn't know which. I thought it was probably going to be more than likely the Navarrete route, because he's probably a little bit more avoided. And I thought I was going to have to go abroad for it. To have it in my own country is just unbelievable. And to have it the next fight from that is even more incredible. I thought I was going to have to box an eliminator. I thought our plan was to go be a boxer, an international title, get ranked, and pretty much forced another right to fight, because not many other people wanted to fight him. So that was the plan. Luckily, I'm always in the gym trying to improve. I enjoy keeping fit. I enjoy training and stuff. So I was in the gym. I had just enough notice to be ready for this fight, and what a massive opportunity it is.
Finally, Mr. Wood, you mentioned Ben Davison there. He has spoken to me about you frequently, and said that perhaps you should have been projected more earlier in your career. What is it about Ben, and how did you guys come together?
Yeah, I do think I've not wasted a lot of years, because I spent a good 10 years in the Ingle gym, and if you've ever been in there, it's a completely different way of training, but you're against elite fighters, up against like training alongside elite fighters like Kell Brook. Obviously, Kid Gala at the time, Junior Whittle, when I first went there. There's been, I don't know more, a long chain of champions that go through that gym. And for me to have that schooling was very important to my success now as well. So it wasn't so much wasted, but fight-wise, I should have done more earlier. But, you know, we can't change anything, and I'm glad I got this opportunity. Now with Ben Davison, he's vital for me achieving my maximum potential, and it's probably been the best move I could have made. I used to go into fights with like game plans and just kind of rock up really fit, really strong.
Rely on your power,
Yeah. I mean, I was always a good boxer because of my schooling, but there's not a lot of method behind it. It was just go out and get the job done. I'll find a way to do it. Now it's more about researching our opponents, game plans, tactics, ironing out my personal things in the ring that I do wrong, don't do great, working on them imperfections, and then how to exploit my opponents as well.
Finally, we looked ahead to Joe Joyce's fight with Carlos Takam, which takes place this weekend. Massive fight for Joe Joyce, in which he can use it as a yardstick to measure himself to see where he is now with a dozen unbeaten fights in his career.
Hailing from Putney, London, England, he was a 2016 Olympic silver medalist, Joe the Juggernaut Joyce!
dear, it's the left eye and he's gone down. He's gone down with the jab right on that damaged left eye. And down he goes. And it could be that it's all over right here. He's had enough. He doesn't want any more. And Joe Joyce, by stoppage, is the new British Commonwealth and European champion.
And now the new British Commonwealth and European heavyweight champion, Joe the Juggernaut Joyce.
Carlos Ducam has landed some very quick left hooks and right hands, primarily the right hand to the chin of Forrest, and right now Forrest doesn't have any answers.
By unanimous decision, Carlos Ducam!
He's always dangerous. He's constantly training. He's a beast. He's always in shape, and he's had a good long time to prepare for me, so he'll be the best version of Takam coming at me. So it's going to be a tricky fight, but an exciting fight.
Well, the voice there finally you heard of Joe Joyce, a very interesting man. He's an absolute, he is a juggernaut. He's a giant human being. And obviously, he does weird things in his spare time, like paints fine art, because he's a fine art graduate, which is what makes him interesting, actually. He is a fascinating man. But the fascination revolves around what he does with his feet and his fists now, next weekend against Carlos Takam. Obviously, we heard the highlights there of him stopping Daniel Dubois last November as well. But now he faces the Cameroonian-born French veteran Takam, who's faced Anthony Joshua, Derek Chisora and others. So we know all about this guy. Joe Joyce, for me, Spence, if he stays around long enough, will eventually be a world champion. He's won a silver medal at the Olympics. He's gone the traditional route, British Commonwealth, European. And now he's starting to climb a ladder. He's only had a dozen fights. He's still early in his career, but he's not early in his life because he's 35. So things have to move on quickly. He's another guy for me, Spencer, who people say he's not all that. And yet every time he steps in there, he proves he is an awful lot of that.
Absolutely. He proves people wrong all the time. And I'm guilty of that actually as well. You know, when Joe first turned over and I looked at him and I thought, you know what? He looks a little bit one-dimensional for me, and he walks
too
forward.
Slow, too rock slow, rock'em sock'em robot, all of that
doesn't move his head, and when he reaches top level, but he keeps delivering, and he keeps pulling it out of the bag. Now, I was one as guilty of seeing him as a massive underdog against Daniel Dubois. I thought Dubois would have too much in his arsenal. I thought he'd have everything all round was better from Daniel Dubois, but Joe Joyce just slowly broke him down, worked behind the jab. You know, tactically, he had it right. He was moving away from Dubois' big right hand, and yeah, he put on a great performance. He went up in my rankings massively after that performance. And you're right, I agree with you actually, Gareth, that I think given the right opportunity and the right fight comes at the right time, he can go on and win a world title. Yes, he is 35 years of age, but in boxing years, he's still a baby. And that's the truth of it. In boxing years, he's not got many miles on the clock. You know, he should have won the gold medal. It was a silver as an amateur in the Olympics. I thought he was unfortunate not to get the gold. But he's still a baby. But, you know, I think that Frank Warren's doing a great job with him. He's developing at the right time and pushing him on, you know. And, I like the look of him. I think that this is a perfect opponent for the perfect time. Carlos Takam, very tough. We see him 10 rounds with Alexander Povetkin, 10 rounds with Anthony Joshua, doing well against Derek Chisora before getting knocked out in 8. You know, this guy is tough. He puts his shots together well. He's got quick hands. He's got good movements. Yes, he is 40 years of age. Yes, there is a lot of miles on the clock, but Takam's coming to win. He feels that, you know, this is a good opportunity to get himself back up there. And it'll be interesting why it lasts. But I just think the juggernaut is too big, too strong. And I think he'll get to him mid-rounds.
It's funny, you know, you say Joe has been kind of brought on in the last 5 years. It's 5 years, obviously. The Olympics start next week in Tokyo. The postponed Olympics for a year. You know, you go back to Rio, where I think he won the gold against Tony Yoka. Look where Tony Yoka, who I've seen several times training in the Oakland gym of Virgil Hunter, he hasn't really progressed. And I think Joe was very unfortunate not to win that gold, Spence. But I think, you know, for me, Joe has an incredible chin. and an ability to punch. The Juggernaut is definitely the right ring sobriquet for him, because he does do that. I think he breaks people's heart. I mean, you mentioned the fight with Daniel Dubois. He didn't just work smartly behind the jab. He peppered Dubois all night with that jab. He was first to the jab. We hear it, don't we, when we're ringside? Be first, yeah. You know, do the one, get the one going, then get the 1-2 going, you know, then get the two going, whatever you're going to do. You know, we hear that all the time. The jab is the most foundational and almost the most potent weapon in boxing. I mean, I let me pose this to you, okay? He's not fighting this guy, but if Joe Joyce got his jab effective, could he not push Deontay Wilder back in the same way over 12 rounds?
Listen, I think he could do that with pretty much anyone. As you said, like, he's so physically strong. We spoke to, you know, current world champions who have sparred him, and they said, you know what, this guy is just phenomenally strong. And I tell you that probably the best way to describe Joe Joyce is what he does with his opponents is he steals their souls. That's what he does. Yeah. He steals their souls. He breaks their hearts and steals their souls. That's what he does. He works them because he looks so one-dimensional, so unorthodox that actually it's effective. You know, he works behind that jab and he looks a little bit robotic, but his opponents don't know where the shots are coming from. And when they hit him, he just keeps marching forward. Now, as an ex-fighter, I know when you hit someone and they just keep walking forward and they're smiling at you and they just keep peppering away, and he's got the work rate, by the way, of a middleweight. He's got a phenomenal work rate. But when you do that, it does something to you. It takes the energy from you, saps the energy from you. And it's probably the best description to say it. It steals your soul. You know, it breaks you. And Joe's great at that.
No, absolutely. It's funny you say about stealing a soul, because I was down by the pool earlier. Obviously, I'm here in Las Vegas. I want to make you feel... I'm going to head back to out on the strips in a couple of hours. But I was sitting down by the pool, Spence. It was 40 degrees.
I'm worrying where this is going to go. Where is this going?
My mojito was on one side. My chicken sliders were on the other. I had friends to the left in about 8 seats who I'd been swimming with earlier, playing water polo in the pool. In the morning session here in the beautiful sunshine of Las Vegas with the music playing. And the funny thing was, I was reading Carol Joyce Oates on boxing. She's a brilliant erudite writer. And, of course, great writers have come. I'm having my lyrical moment on the show right now.
Yeah.
I'm having my lyrical and cultural moment on the show right now. And, you know, the great writers, Mark Twain, Ernest Hemingway, Norman Mailer, great writers have come to boxing because they're captured by the narrative that people like yourself are able to suspend the safety of their own personas, the safety of their own souls, and put it into a compartment and go and fight someone. It's a very extraordinary thing to do. And I was genuinely reading about this by the pool earlier, and there was the talking about when you fight someone, when you hurt them, you do take a part of their soul. Mm-hmm. And Joyce is so calm, to bring it back to Joe Joyce, he's so calm and he's so mellow when he doesn't fight, and he's hard to get annoyed. He's someone who comes in, he's like a giant assassin coming into the ring. Well, anyway, let's hear from him. James Savundra of TalkSport caught up with the heavyweight earlier this week, and here's what Joe had to say.
You don't seem to be fazed by anything. You seem very calm when you're in the ring or when we're speaking to you now. Do you ever get nervous for anything?
No, not really. I just take it in my stride and I make sure I do all my preparation in the gym so that I'm ready for fight night and I'm in my comfort zone. It's exciting, adrenaline-filled sport. It's like an extreme sport, so it's what I enjoy doing. And, it pays the bills.
And a week or so out now from the Carlos Takam fight. I've been waiting a while to see you fight again. How are you feeling heading into it?
Yeah, feeling good. I got my last spar coming up later. So I've already done the warm-up today in VR. And, I'm sparring Babic the Savage. So he's going to be hard work. He's going to be trying to knock me out. And, it's going to be fun. But definitely great preparation for my fight on Saturday night.
What's it been like sparring Babic? Because he seems absolutely relentless. He seems completely unhinged at times.
Yeah, I thought I was relentless. He's relentless. And, it's coming with some really great work. And, really happy he could take the time out to come and spar with me in preparation for this for me facing Takam, because yes, much needed. And also my other sparring partners, they've got me prepared for this big test.
What sort of challenge do you think Carlos Takam will give you? We know a lot about him. He's taken the likes of Joshua, taken the likes of Parker, Povetkin and Chisora. Where do you think he's at now?
He's always dangerous. He's constantly training. He's a beast. He's always in shape. He's had a good long time to prepare for me, so he'll be the best version of Takam coming at me. So it's going to be a tricky fight, but an exciting fight. And, once I beat him, then I can go on and do bigger and better things.
And are you looking forward to getting back in the ring again? It must have been a long time feeling impatient, thinking you were going to take on Usyk. That didn't happen. So mentally, it must have been quite a challenging few months.
Yeah, I had to, because I thought I was going to fight Usyk. So I had sparring and like getting my head around like in training and pads to fight a southpaw. But then there's a change of plans and fighting Takam. But I was never like 100% that I was going to fight Usyk. So I was just kind of ticking over till I got the nod that it was definitely happening. And I could go full steam ahead, and that's what's happened now. I've got the fight with Takam, and that's what I've been doing. And coming to the end of my camp, so last burst, and then fight night.
And what do you think a victory over Carlos Takam will give you? You're number two at the moment in the WBO, and that fight between Joshua and Usyk, when that happens, you then immediately go up to number one. Do you think you will get this world title shot soon? When do you think it will be?
I've no idea, but I'll get there sooner or later. Just need to stay ready and active, and that's what I'm doing.
You're looking in great shape. You are 35, you turned 36 in September, but you look a lot younger than that, and because you've not had that many pro fights, you must feel pretty fresh. Are you concerned about time running out, or do you feel like you've got a long period of time left in this sport?
No, I feel like I'm at the peak of my fitness and prowess and experience, so I think now is the best time. I had a late start at 22, so I've had more than 10 years in the sport, so I'm still improving, I'm constantly learning, and yeah, I'm ready for these top fights, and now I'm just waiting for that opportunity to become world champion.
The mellow tones of Joe Joyce, a fighter, artist, and no doubt, I think, world champion. Right, Spencer, I've got a little quiz for you right now. Okay, you ready?
Sure, I'm ready.
Okay, in reverse order. Joe Joyce versus Dillian White, pick a winner.
Ooh, tough one. Right now, Dillian White.
And how's the victory?
Dillian White would win that by KO. I think if it went all the way, then I'd have to go Joe Joyce, because I think of his work rate is phenomenal. But I think Dillian right now, Dillian's far too experienced. He's at a different level, so Dillian White KO.
Do you think Dillian has faster hand speed than Joe?
Yes.
Do you think that's what wins it for him in the end?
No, I just think he's more seasoned, and he's competed at that level for longer. I think that they're at different stages of their career. Dillian's there now, knocking on the door for a world title shot. Should have had one 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if I'm totally honest. And he's ready, Dillian. And I think that, I think that Joe Joyce, on the other hand, is still at that stage where he's going through your Carlos Takams, your Derek Chisoras, that sort of level before he steps up to the level where Dillian White's at. Dillian White is in the top tier of the heavyweights at the moment. He's in the elite level, and Joe Joyce right now is at that level below, that fringe contender level.
Well, our thanks to all our guests this week, and my thanks to Spencer Oliver for joining me on the Fight Night podcast. Enjoy. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.